Welcome to Communicate Like You Give a Damn, the podcast. Our guests share their stories and approaches to embedding diversity, equity, and inclusion in communications because, I mean, let's be honest, we know the power of language. And language leads to behavior. So thank you. Thank you for joining us in leveling up your communications. I'm your host, Kim Clark, and DEI communications, it's kind of my thing. So let's get into it. Let's learn more about how to communicate like you give a damn. Conversation today. Oh my goodness. A little bit of a story of how I met Ellen Bailey. She will introduce herself in just a second here, but I saw her speak at a conference in 2023. We're recording this in 2024. And everything that she talked about, I just went, yes, yes. And it got me fired up. It also was very validating. And I got some new ideas. I was inspired to be looking at DEI work in a slightly different way. And as a communicator, I'm looking for those opportunities. I'm looking for ways to, how do I tell the story? And in the most effective manner that resonates with the audience, like especially employees that I'm trying to talk to, and how do I encourage leaders to be a part of the conversation? Well, Ellen knows how to do all of those things. So I'm going to pass it over to you to introduce yourself, and then we'll get started.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. It's an absolute honor and a pleasure to be here with you today. And I am Ellen Bailey, the Vice President of Business and Culture Transformation at Harvard Business Publishing. I also own my own business called The Bailey Difference as well. And so I have been with Harvard Business Publishing for just about 13 years. I've been a remote employee out of Dallas, Texas the entire time. And this is, I don't know, role number three or four, I think, that I've held there. And this is a little bit self-imposed. So we'll get into that a little bit more. But my background is actually not in the DE&I space for the most part. I'm a new practitioner working in the space the past 4 years, like many of my colleagues and counterparts. And so my history is all things kind of leadership and management.
Okay. I'm curious about the title. So walk us through like how you got to the title. And how you approach DEI at Harvard Business Publishing.
Absolutely, Kim. And it is interesting because it is a unique title purposefully. So like many other organizations and like many other leaders in this space, when during 2020, lots of organizations really ramped up and amped up their work regarding diversity, equity, inclusion, which is fantastic. And as horrible as it is that George Floyd had to be murdered for us to be woke, it is what it is, right? And I'm not at all minimizing that, but that is what got us to where we are today. So I say that then because while many people have been leading DE&I work prior to 2020, what happened in 2020 made us recognize that if what we were doing and all of that fabulous hard work of and emotional work of all those DE&I leaders to 2020 was having the desired impact, then we actually wouldn't have been woke in 2020. We would have just doubled down. And so then it made me rethink then what we are doing and why. So at Harvard Business Publishing, to be quite frank, we had a lot of ground to gain. And so leading and having the title of VP of Diversity and Culture made sense at that time because we needed to get all of the foundational things right. I had a dual reporting structure into the CHRO and the CEO that worked great. And the CHRO was so wonderful, Angela Chang-Simony, that we were able to truly partner to revamp all of our people management systems and processes to weave all things DE&I into those processes. So everything from promotions to our hiring practices to annual reviews are now equitable and inclusive. And are we always going to be perfect? No. Are we ever going to get it always right? No. But at least we work together to do the best we can to minimize inequities and biases and all those processes. So then back to the, we should have just doubled down in 2020. I also saw a video from Stedman Graham, Oprah's partner from, I don't know, 9, 10 years ago, not even in high def. And it was after he launched his first book about the importance of D&I and business. And he was saying things like, it's a business imperative and all of the things that we hear today. It needs to be treated like and have a strategy and goals and a budget, just like everything else. And you get better business results if you're diverse and inclusive. So I'm like, oh my gosh, yet again, here we are 10 years later and we have the same narrative. So then it was like, can we not take what we learned from working with HR and infusing DE&I into the people practices and apply that to the business practices? And so then to do that, we need to redefine what this type of role and what that work looks like. And how do we either become our partner with operations to be able to truly change how we operate and be able to infuse all things DE&I into those operating practices? So it becomes a win-win. And when we think about then what that title looks like, it is like, okay, we know culture eats strategy for breakfast. So we know that we have to work on the culture as well as those business practices as one simultaneous work stream. And that is what led us to the title Business and Culture Transformation. And so it's a bit of a long story and I apologize for the ramble, but there was a madness to our method on how we got there. A method to our madness on how we got there.
Oh no, yeah. I like the first way. Yeah.
Yeah. The first one is actually more fun and probably more accurate.
Because, I mean, we are making up something that has never existed before.
That's
right. We are trying to make something a reality that is, we have no precedent, you know? So mm-hmm. we just have vision. Mm-hmm. We have an idea. We have mm-hmm. hope. We have a possibility. Right. That's great. Just specifically that you include transformation in the title, I think is, mm-hmm. I really want to like pause on that for a minute. Because mm-hmm. one of the things that us communicators miss about diversity, equity, inclusion work is that this is actually change management.
It is.
We are absolutely asking leaders to change mm-hmm. how they see, treat, communicate with employees. We are asking people managers to change to do the same thing. We are asking individual contributors to change how they treat, show up, involve their teammates and colleagues. Mm-hmm. There's, you know, we're changing how we're hiring, we're changing how we're retaining, how we're promoting. What a culture needs in order for everyone to have an opportunity to thrive, where everyone has, it deserves to be at a safe place when they are at work. You know, this doesn't exist. And that's why we need the intentionality of DEI because it doesn't happen organically. But I really want communicators to hear that we're missing this opportunity to see that we are actually going through change management and needs to be treated as such.
Absolutely. And the word transformation was what we debated on the most when coming up with that title, because we don't want to scare folks and think it's a lot, but it is. And so we landed on it to intentionally drive the message that this is critical and it is important and it's big. And to your point, you're exactly right. So we use the, you know, Kotter change management process. And that's what our team does, right? Is we do analysis to look at the business. What are the key things that we can influence? If we even make small tweaks or large tweaks, that then we can make people more effective, more efficient, as well as making sure that things are more equitable and inclusive.
Love it. Love it. One of the stories that sometimes I'll share with clients is I remember back in the days when I would come to work and there was one computer in the office and it was usually in the sales office. Yeah. I had an electric typewriter in my office and, you know, no email, you know, nothing like that. And every organization was faced with a choice. are you going to evolve into the technology, that digital transformation, which requires what? It requires training. It requires capital. It requires fear of the unknown, but do it anyway. It requires this future-proofing risk that, you know, goes into any kind of a business transformation. DEI is very similar to that approach. Yeah. We need training. We need support. We need change management. We need investment. You know, we need to step into that fear of the unknown. We need to step into the risks and identify who we are in this work in order to future-proof our organizations. So those who didn't go through that digital transformation because it was too costly, people were uncomfortable, they, you know, it was too risky, they're not here anymore.
Nope. That's right.
So that's you exactly had to right. transform the way business was done in order to stay in business. And that's the choice that leaders are being faced with right now. It's the same choice, the same decision.
It's the exact same choice. And there, you know, people are like, oh, we need to improve for the moral case, you know, and enough with the business case. And I love all of those articles, by the way, because we publish those. And you're exactly right. You know, when you think about enough with the business case. However, we do know, and it is statistically proven, and you can pull from HBR, you can pull from McKinsey, you can pull from Deloitte. Everybody knows that if your organization is diverse and inclusive, your people can thrive, you get the best from your people, you get better performance, you get better results. Okay, so then, how do we make sure that we do this in a systemic way and that it's not relying on you pushing it? It's not relying on me. It's not relying on this leader over here, making sure that we're doing those things right. Because what I want to go down fighting is that 10 years from now, I am not going to be saying the same thing that Stedman Graham did 10 years ago. And so how do we need to think about this differently? So as we think about it, even if you're a nonprofit like we are, you still need to bring in enough money to do the good work and to, you know, pay your employees and to keep the lights on. So no matter how you slice or dice it, the bottom line is how can we leverage and think about DE&I differently so that it's a win-win? It's not a trade-off. It is we do right by our people and we focus on that. We adjust our processes accordingly. I think it's Jeff Bezos, whatever you think about him, he has this great quote and he says, good intentions don't get results, mechanisms do. And I remember when I heard that, I was at Bitmoji with the head exploding, right? Because I'm like, goodness gracious, that's it exactly. You can enable individuals and they can have great intent, but if your processes and your practices and your systems don't support that change, then it's all for naught, and you're doing this. And so that's why it takes both. And let's think about it that way. It's not a trade-off. Nobody's losing. We're not burying DE&I. It's none of that. We're just looking at it broader than I think we maybe have historically.
Okay. So you're a leader in this conversation and moving this work forward in a very meaningful, transformative way. How did you get here, Ellen? Like, what was your path that led you to this role?
Yeah. So it's so interesting. So as I mentioned, you know, right out of college, I did like sales and then I became a sales trainer. And then that got me into the whole like leadership development space. And I worked a long time in the leadership development space, which was the majority of my career at Harvard Business Publishing. And so it was literally just as an individual contributor looking around me, not seeing many people that looked like me. I identify as Black, she, her, and going, doggone it, we're HBP. We need to be better at this. And so I took it upon myself to have some conversations with my boss at the time about, we need to be better at this. And so I then started getting a little bit of formal education in the space so that I could present a recommendation and kind of a business case back to HBP. And so I literally just started doing that as a side hustle, so to speak. Like I still had my daytime job at HBP. And it was the last day of February in 2020. I had a one pager and it was the purpose, process, and payoff. It is, here's the purpose of us leaning into all things things D&I. It was D&I at that time. Mm-hmm. Here are the three or four initiatives that we should do to get started, kind of some low hanging but basic fruit. And then the bottom was the payoff to the organization. And I had this one pager, and I met with one of our EVPs because we were calling on a client the next day. And he was like, let's meet for dinner and let's talk about this. And we did. And then 2 weeks later, everything shut down due to COVID. And then 2 months later, George Floyd was murdered. And that is literally how I got to this role. I never thought I would lead this work. I never planned on leading this work. It was not in my trajectory as far as career, but here I am. And it is a privilege to do this work. And I know that there's debates, especially from folks of color, that it's not my responsibility. I don't represent everybody. Yeah, it kind of is. Because Selma didn't happen. John Lewis didn't lay in a hospital bed. Martin Luther King didn't die for us to go, yeah, I don't really want to speak up. No. We don't have that luxury. We are privileged to be able to be here. And I'm not saying we should just, it's a handout, but since we are here, let us leverage the influence that we have to change for good so that we are, the folks behind us don't have the same fight that we do. And we're not 10 years saying the same narrative that Stedman Graham said, and he was ahead of his time 10 years ago, by the way. So thank you, Stedman, for bringing that to our attention 10 years ago. But it really does take every single one of us. So that's how I ended up here. And then I was doing the role for a couple years going, if I leave, if this manager leaves, then do we just go back? Like, how do we make this sustainable? And then that was the shift to, we did such good work with HR. How do we replicate that across the business? So it is new. I don't always get a positive response from, you know, counterparts across the globe, because I think it's unfamiliar and it's a little scary. The initial reaction is sometimes not positive because they're like, oh, you're going to get buried under operations. You know, it's like, no. If we're going to change how we operate and include DE&I in those things, then I need to be part of the operating team. And so right. I think it's just a communication and education thing.
And, you know, I get hit up with a lot of questions of like, I want to move into DEI. So you kind of like, but you proactively put together that message map. You were thinking about it, but not necessarily as a role or as a career. So you were showing up and doing the work, perhaps even more so than you realized leading up to it. Then when it became more official, you were ready to say yes. What advice would you give to somebody who is interested in having DEI more of, because everybody needs to do DEI. Like, you don't need a title and all of the things. You don't need certification. You know, it's like, it's, you know, there's a lot to it. Mm-hmm. I don't go down that road around education too much, but because but it's true. Anybody is rolling into DEI right now, which is backfiring big time because people are like, DEI doesn't work. And it's like, well, what kind of work have you been involved in? Because I've seen some amazing things. Right. But anyway, so it's like, we don't want just like anybody, but it is everyone's responsibility to have a DEI lens on whatever role they have. But if somebody wants to make it kind of official and have it be a part of their title, what would be your advice to get people to help them get there?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think there are two things, at least that I did when I was thinking about making that, when 2020 happened and it's like, oh, what do I do with this, right? And so the first thing I would say is to understand like best practices and frameworks specific to what people have done previously, because then you can leverage some of those to either do things differently or to expand and enhance on that. So there are some very foundational frameworks and concepts that you need from a education standpoint, and you don't need to pay for it, right? Like, there are things that you can leverage free online and things like that to help you get to that point. The second piece is, and this is what I say about anytime anybody's trying to improve their organization in any form, which is, regardless of what your title is, regardless of what your level is, it is, as an employee of an organization, it is our responsibility to help improve the results and the business. It is our responsibility as good stewards of the organization that if we see something, to say something and to lean into that. And that takes courage. I think people think it's risky. I hear that all the time. Oh, Ellen, you're taking big risks. I can't believe you pitched that to this person or that person, the CEO, the whatever. It's like, It never, honestly, Kim, it never occurs to me that that is risky when I am coming to the CEO or I'm going to the EVP with a way to improve the business. Why wouldn't
Absolutely.
they want to hear that? And so they may
Absolutely.
not be able to act on it. Okay, Ellen, we can't do these three things, but we can do this one thing. Or, okay, I like where you're going. Maybe not this, but let's talk through what we can do. Why wouldn't a senior leader want to improve the business? And so that's how we have to think about it. So when you see something, a missed opportunity or a gap, lean into it. Lean into it and don't just call it out. Even you don't even necessarily have to have a solution, but you can even say, like, you know what? I feel like we're missing an opportunity here. And I don't quite know what the answer is, but I'd love to have the conversation. And I guess that takes courage. I just look at it like it's my responsibility as part of the organization to help us be better.
Yeah. And how good it can be when we are, especially those of us who look like me and the dominant majority, that kind of thing, like the coachability, if we are coachable, how good it can be for all of our
Yes.
employees and how
That's
better it
exactly
is
right.
even for us, because we're shooting ourselves in our own foot with these restrictions and holding other people back is holding us back.
That's right. And research shows that if your organization is equitable for a black woman, especially if they're a single mom, then your organization is equitable for everybody. So everybody wins. There, again, there's not a trade-off. Everybody wins. And when we were looking at our people processes and doing analysis, it wasn't like we took, oh, we're going to take the black people and put them against the white people. It's like, no, are you kidding me? We did equitable research across the board and adjusted things as necessary. So, like, nobody gets anything taken away. Everybody wins. Everybody wins. And if your organization performs better, then you might get a better merit increase or a better bonus or whatever. So, like, it even financially can be beneficial.
Yeah, no one is left out on the benefits
No,
when
you
DEI is
got
done
it.
well. And
Correct.
as absolutely. So, I want to talk about the narrative around DEI. A
Yeah.
couple of months ago, I held a LinkedIn Live and it was called DEI Needs a Comms Plan. And
Right. Yes.
it was coming from this idea of like DEI, if DEI was my client. And I am the consultant to DEI and
Yeah.
helping build out a comms team for DEI. Like, what does
Yeah.
that plan look like? So it's been and I've been warning people for a year and a half or so now that we would
Yeah.
be getting to this place. And now here we are. So there's this fervent attack. I mean, obviously, Harvard's been all over in the
Oh,
news
yeah.
around this, but higher education in general has been really roped into all of this. It's absolutely trickling out to nonprofits and organizations. I mean, corporate as well. It's almost making me wish for the days of just the pushback,
I know, right?
and we thought that was
Yeah.
scary. It's like, oh, but just wait. And I don't think we've hit rock bottom, but what are you seeing? What are you hearing and experiencing? What's going on? And what do you see as what's the purpose behind all of this?
Absolutely. So people are fearful when they feel there's not enough slices in the pie, and people are fearful when there is a level of imposter syndrome, and people are fearful that they're going to lose their place. And so therefore we get a lot of unnecessary pushback because they don't recognize those benefits that we just discussed. And so in my instance, for example, the last couple of jobs I had did not exist, right? I didn't take somebody's job. It is no, we can all work together for the greater good. And here is the business case on why this role is necessary to help the organization advance and to help the people of the organization. And so it is, I think we're a little bit too literal on like specific to the fear. So therefore, to me, there are two key things that we need to do regarding that narrative. And so I am back to the business case. So it is an accepted point of view that culture eats strategy for breakfast. culture is much bigger than just diversity, equity, and inclusion. And so as we think about culture eating strategy for breakfast, then how do we ensure that we have a really good, strong culture so that we have the business results that we need? And so there's a framework that we use here at HBP, which is strategy plus mechanisms plus culture equals success. And I'm stealing that mechanisms from that Jeff Bezos term. And so if any one of those three components are missing, then we're not going to meet our potential. And so then, as we think about culture, nobody is arguing the importance of culture. Nobody will disagree with the culture eat strategy for breakfast. Most people won't, right? So then let us leverage that language, because that is saying we are trying to drive a strong culture that is equitable for everyone, which is absolutely true. And as part of that, diversity, equity, and inclusion work is built in. So it's not burying it. It's just thinking about it broader than how we think about how we have traditionally thought about it. So I don't know if it was, I don't even know what it was, divine intervention, because we went down this path and in the fall of 2020 started shifting my team and my role so that we rolled out that change in March of 2023 before all of this pushback. So when my friends who clearly never listen to me when I'm talking to them at happy hour go, are you still going to have a job? Are you okay? Are they going to eliminate your DEI department? I'm like, oh my God, do you never hear anything we talk about over a glass of wine? Because I've been talking about like why we are not doing things the traditional way, right? And so that therefore then it's different because we're looking at driving business results by leveraging and enhancing a culture where everyone can thrive.
If you're on video, you're seeing her reaction right now.
I'm not saying the execution is simple, but the concept is.
It really
is. And the approach is. And let's not overcomplicate this. And then even when we were doing our internal needs analysis, I took data from different points, you know, voice of employee survey, this and that. I pulled together a small committee, so to speak, from across the organization, different levels. We cross-referenced what we're hearing against our priorities, our goals, and our values. And we're like, where do we start? And so it's like, we're going to start with these three things. Okay, let's go. So you can't go wrong. Like, let's go. And so all you can do is go up.
Mm-hmm. Completely agree. Mm-hmm. So how?
And so that DE&I language, we don't even reference it that much anymore, because we are talking about how do we drive an equitable and inclusive culture where everybody can thrive.
Yeah, it's the outcomes. This is an excellent point. Is talking about the outcomes and that no one is left out of those outcomes.
When we That's
say
exactly
inclusion,
right.
We actually mean inclusion in our, not just words, but our actions and the mechanisms
Correct.
To your point.
That's exactly right. So even our employee business resource groups, we call them business resource groups for a reason. And so, yes, those employee business resource groups are there for us to ensure that you have the support and that we make, and that we have equitable and inclusive opportunities for everyone. And we need your input to help drive the business. So it's twofold. And I say that because our EBRGs are not closed. So we have a mosaic EBRG that supports people of color. You can, Kim, if you're an ally, come join that EBRG. We set it up like that 2 years ago. And so because it isn't, it does take the village and it does take all of us working together so that we can all be great. And if we're not equitable and inclusive, then we're not going to get the new ideas, which means we're not going to grow as an organization. So our EBRGs have been open and inclusive of all, with focus areas, of course, because there are nuances based on lived experiences and identity. But we're all trying to strive to get towards that right thing.
Absolutely. So everything that Ellen's been talking about, communicators, I hope you've been jotting down, because that's the story. That's the DEI narrative. That's the outcome-based conversation that we need to lead, whether we're using the terms directly or not. Because I can say that many people don't actually, they don't have a clear understanding, or they think they know what DEI is, or even especially now that it's been weaponized as an acronym, which is the next evolution of CRT, woke, and DEI. It's just the next thing to get people riled up and divided. Yeah. And as communicators, we need to say not on our watch, that not we are much. About civility, respect. Mm-hmm. We are about safety for all of our employees here. We are, you know, to your point, we are all about everyone has the opportunity to thrive here, but we have to be safe in order to thrive here. Mm-hmm. So it's like, these are all ways to talk, all the ways, several ideas of ways that you can talk about diversity, mm-hmm. equity, and inclusion that is outcome-based and is inclusive of every employee demographic and identity experience within the workplace. So tell us, let's go a little deeper on what your advice would be. What do communicators need to do to think and talk about DEI differently? Mm-hmm. And one thing I'll also share with you, Ellen, that's been really frustrating for me as a communicator is that those who seek to divide, have misinformation, disinformation around DEI have been really effective, very strategically effective at being sticky and coming up with terms that people can easily parrot, not question, and just have an ideology about, which is causing divisions within teams, you know, it's distancing leaders from actually getting involved in the work because they don't want to be a part. They don't want to end up getting boycotted. They don't want to be a Planet Fitness, you know, or whatever, a Target, whatever. So, so man, we got to find some sticky messages. We got to figure out how to talk about this. That doesn't sound vague or theoretical, but very practical and emotionally charged. That's pulled by vision.
That's exactly right. And I think that there are, I continue to state this business case, right? So I think that there are two things that we need to think about when it comes to communication. And one is there is language that is used by Robin Ely and many others around what they call the sameness cycle. Sameness cycle. Mm. And so what ends up happening is just out of pure comfort, you think like me, you look like me. We both went to such and such, you know, state schools or Ivy League schools or whatever it is. We have this immediate connection with people that have a similar or are like same. And so then we tend to hire those people. We tend to promote those people. And so that's where unconscious bias comes into play, right? And I know people are like, oh gosh, enough with the unconscious bias, but that's it at play. And so that's why you see majority of corporations in the US are, there are more white men at the top than women, as an example, because of that sameness cycle. And so when we think about how communication, it is, how do we, if we don't break that cycle, it is literally more of the same from a business results, outcomes, revenue perspective. So we know that it takes innovative ideas, breaking the status quo, and thinking beyond the moment. And so we need a diverse group of people a culture that feels safe where people can bring up those ideas, or else you won't get there. So where these organizations are right now, they won't get better. They won't be around in the future if they don't embrace the cultural element to help inform the business. And so if we keep on with the sameness cycle, it's going to be the same people sharing the same narrative, and they're never going to advance. And so when you're thinking about internal communications, that's one of the things that you can discuss is how do we make sure some of the language that we use at HPP is what unique value does this individual bring? What unique perspective does that individual bring that will help us get to the next level? And so it's saying things like that that will help break that sameness cycle and being intentional about the language. And then I do go back to the culture piece. So when you hear experts like Kenji Yoshino or John Powell, and folks like that that talk about the state. Hillary Clinton spoke a couple of nights ago at the Diversity and Leadership Conference, and she's like, we have to reboot And so because it's under attack and it's like, yeah, that's it exactly. So how do we do that in a way that even gets greater results than what we've seen in the past 10 years? And that is to make sure that we are inclusive of all, that people see the benefits of all, that we use terms like culture, and that then we leverage everyone to help elevate. Because the majority of, and this is not a ding at all, but the majority of corporations in the U.S., the CEOs are white male. It's just a statistic. So we need to make sure as leaders of this DE&I type of work that we partner with them on driving towards a greater business solution. Where I unfortunately sometimes see a gap, and I'm not the best at it either. It's just the benefit of working at HPP. I get to absorb all things we publish, right? So you need to understand the business language. You need to understand Kotter and the change model. You need to understand what disruptive strategy is by Clay Christensen. You need to be able to put a 2x2 together when you're talking about your priorities and why you need a budget. And so it is using that business language to help drive the greater results, but knowing that culture and all things DE&I are built into that, it makes you fairly insular. Because you're talking about how do we grow as a business? And this is a key component of that.
Thank you. Thank you for that. I was at a conference for the Institute for Public Relations in DC and got to speak. And one of the things that I had the opportunity to share was, you know, some of these organizations that are pulling back, I'm not mad at that because they could be causing more harm than good. With the kind of way that they're talking about DEI or the way that they're going about DEI, it could be entrenched in a performative system. Mm-hmm. And so if you're taking the time, if you're pulling back and saying less right now, but you're going into a back room, especially with an external consultant, and asking the right questions, like what problems are we solving for from a culture standpoint, from a business standpoint, to future-proof our organization, you will have a DEI, and then you're adding that DEI lens to the answers. You're recognizing the power of culture that is going to drive the strategic results. And then you're going to be more meaningful in how you talk about it and actually the transformation that Ellen was talking about earlier. So, you know, some people need to pull back, you know, because what they're doing is actually causing more harm than good. You know, the feedback, the pushback is feedback is kind of how I look at it. It's really showing us where the holes are. And it's forcing us as communicators, especially those who look like me, to get a deeper education of what DEI outcomes are. What are we really trying to do here? And how have we unintentionally remarginalized some of our employee base that we've got to repair and we've got to call in. We've got to call in some folks, thinking of Professor Loretta, you know, Jay Ross at Smith, I believe. And so, you know, just thinking through, like, we have to be more thoughtful and strategic and assess ourselves and how good of a job have we been doing? Because if we are turning into a Stedman quote and then, you know, we haven't made any kind of changes, then we haven't done the work, we haven't had the conversations, and the organization and the employees that support it are going to suffer as a result.
That's right.
Go ahead. Go ahead, please.
No, I was just going to say that's right. And it is as important to, like we kind of got to get this right. At this point, especially with DEI under attack, we don't have the luxury of getting it wrong.
Or time.
We don't have the time.
We don't have time. There's no, as one of the things my mentor recently said is we do not have time for despair. There is no time for despair.
Well said.
How does communicating, this is something I ask every guest, so I really look forward to your response to this. How does communicating like you give a damn sound like or look like to you?
So to me, it is regularly challenging the status quo. And so it is continuing to ask the hard questions and to challenge the current system. And so we need to be intentional about our communication that actually even individually sets us apart and ideally sets our organizations apart. And so it is kind of having that courage to speak up and be like, wait, what? Have we thought about this? Or has anybody challenged this? Why do we do that this way? And so specifically when it comes to DE&I, communicating like you give a damn is showing up with courage and challenging the status quo in a way that will get us to the greater good.
Yes, 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 yes. And language leads to behavior. That's why my money is on communicators to help
yes.
turn this narrative around, mm-hmm. to squash the misinformation, the disinformation, mm-hmm. and tell the truth about what DEI is. That is, includes everybody, and it benefits everybody. Mm-hmm. So invite people to the work. Invite more people into the work. How can people follow and support you? And if you wouldn't mind talking a little bit about your own consulting firm.
Mm-hmm. Sure, absolutely. Thank you. So you can follow me on LinkedIn. It's just Ellen Bailey. And my work that I do as far as on the side is really helping to close some of these gaps that we've been talking about today. And so I really only talk to and lead workshops and coach on two things, super narrowly focused. And one is the education around DE&I in the business. And so it is helping leaders think about it differently and closing that language and communication around business. And so how do we think like a CEO and drive a greater culture thinking like a CEO? So that's one piece of it. And that's a talk as well as a workshop. The other side of it is just so in July of 2019, I was an individual contributor, and July of 2021, I was a vice president. And how the heck does that happen? And so the other piece of it is, especially as a person of color, but it also applies to women and people that just feel stalled. I thought that showing up every day and doing the good work and even winning a few awards here and there would help me get promoted and help me advance. And I recognize that's not the case. And so you actually mm-hmm. have to build a personal board of directors. You have to take ownership of your career. You have to self-promote in a way that makes sense and demonstrate to the organizations, to your organization, the value and the potential that you have and that you can bring, not just how you do your work today. And so that's the other talk and consultation that I work with individuals and organizations on, is how to advance yourself in a way that brings you value as well as the organization. So yeah, and I apologize, I'm not great on social media, but I'm quite active on LinkedIn. So that's probably the best way to get a hold of me. And then my personal business website is ellen-bailey.com.
And do you also just speak to how people can stay in integrity with their own values and mm-hmm. and how they show up when they're in these quests yeah. to get promoted, et cetera?
Absolutely, I do. And I think that's actually where I start, which is being true to yourself and understanding what your purpose is, and then aligning your purpose with your strengths. And then that way you are doing the good work and showing up in a way that supports your values. And that also gives you additional energy on the times when life is really hard.
Mm. So. Yeah, we need that.
I need that on a regular basis. So, yeah. And so, and I do silly little things too. Like, for example, I had to move my picture of John Lewis from behind me to in front of me. So like, as I look at the camera, I see a picture of John Lewis, because on those hard days, you're like, okay, I didn't have to march in Selma. I just have to speak up in this meeting tomorrow. And so there's
I think that's where we end. So with the sacrifices to get us to this point, we're far greater than what is being asked of us today. We need to step up. We need to speak up. We need to show
That's right.
up. Thank you, Ellen. Really appreciate you being here.
My pleasure.
Okay. So what popped out to you from this conversation? And I mean, it may take a minute to process, but be sure not to brush off what you just heard. Look, you just need a partner to be with you through this experience and understand what to do next. So I'm inviting you to set up a one-on-one strategy session. All you need to do is go to communicatelikeyougiveadamnthepodcast.com and you'll see the button there. The more conscious communicators in the world, the better the world. So thank you for listening, and until next time, let's communicate like we give a damn.